Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris, and this is the EdShift podcast.
Our goal at EdShift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with education leaders and innovators from around the world who are committed, in subtle and in grand ways, to shifting the fabric of education. Through their approach to pedagogy, policy, tech, and everything in between, we're exploring the ideas and actions driving educators globally. Check out the show notes and resources for ways to connect with us and our guests, as well as bonus lesson content connected to each episode's conversations. Today, we're going to talk about heading back to school. Students and teachers alike are coming back to the classroom with unexpected skills, as well as hopes for how the classroom experience can evolve moving forward. How we support all of them will be important as we move forward together.
We're joined today by Sakan Kia. I've had the privilege of working with and hearing from Sakan throughout the past school year. Her thoughtfulness, thoroughness, and passion for her teachers and students is unparalleled. I'm excited to have her here today to talk to us about what she learned from the pandemic and how that continues to guide her work.
Let's jump into the conversation. Hi, Sakan. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Really thrilled to have you on the EdShift podcast. Tell us a little bit more, Sakan, about your role at DCPS and sort of what got you to where you are, because I know you have a really impressive and interesting backstory that got you to where you are today.
Okay. Oh, I am the Director of Educational Technology. I manage a team of 9 individuals that support 115 schools and central office staff in DCPS. We provide professional development on tech tools, as well as work with our content teams on integrating technology into our current curriculum. So my journey here has been a journey. I began as an elementary school teacher. I did that for about 8 years, and then I transitioned into being, well, as an elementary school teacher way back in like 2005, when technology was just coming into the classroom. I always integrated it because it just made my life so much easier. And then I kind of fell in love with the integration of technology and started training other teachers on my grade level. And then I kind of fell into the professional development role at my school part-time while I was also teaching. And then when I decided to leave teaching, I became a technology assistant at an elementary school. And then from there, I transitioned into DCPS, where I was like a school-based blended learning specialist, where I was helping a middle school begin that blended learning process about 7 years ago, when blended learning was a hot topic. So I was helping the district to get that off the ground. And then I left that school after about a year and a half and transitioned into our central office, where I went from being a specialist, an elementary tech specialist for our STEM team, and then moved up to being a manager of where I was supporting our cluster support managers that provide PDs to school. And then most recently, I evolved into being director of EdTech. So I've had a long train ride, but that's brought me where I am today.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for that. I mean, you say 2005. I'm like, oh yeah, that hasn't been so long. And they go, oh yeah, no, it has been. It has been. And it sounds like really, Sakan, you are so well positioned and have been at kind of the leading edge, really, of, you know, the technology conversations and technology integration of this blended learning conversation. You know, what would you say are a couple of key lessons that you took from some of the, you know, quote, earlier work that you did in blended learning that have really helped you over this last year that we've been navigating a whole different conversation around blended?
The first thing is, it's blended learning is a mindset shift for a lot of educators, because if you're used to not integrating tech at all and just used to, you know, direct instruction and worksheets, et cetera, and relying on those things, it's a big mindset shift. So something that I've learned over the course of the years, even rolling into the pandemic and until now, is number one, I mean, you have to like develop some sort of a plan for teachers that are not familiar with blended learning. So first you have to orientate them with the basic use of the tech tool. So this is how the application or platform works. And then once they get that, then you start the conversation of, let's talk about how we can integrate this into your instructional practice. To number one, increase student engagement. To number two, extend the learning beyond that classroom. Number three, to enhance whatever you're doing to make it better so that students understand the learning goals. So that two prong, and then after that, once we integrate into instruction, then it's like ongoing job embedded support. So that three prong approach of teachers learning the basic skills first, then we talk about how we can integrate it into your instructional practice. And then finally, ensuring that we're providing ongoing supports throughout. That three prong approach really has helped to grow our teachers as we've moved towards that more blended approach for education.
Yeah, appreciate the, you know, it sounds simple, but maintaining kind of a straightforward way of looking at those three key steps.
And Sakan, I've had the opportunity to talk with you so many times over this past year, and I love the insights and the passion that you've shared. And, you know, just now talking about blended learning, you're very thoughtful, well thought out, planned approach to it. Like, I love your insight on that side of it. And so when we think about, you know, what's happened in the past 18 months, the challenges, the unfinished learning, the unexpected gains that our students have had, and the needs that they're coming back with as we return to face-to-face school, like what for you is really important going back to school in fall of 2021?
Well, the number one important thing is that teachers don't lose all of the knowledge and skills they've acquired over the last 18 months. So our team we're sticking true to this three-part plan that we have, even as teachers return to in-person. So during pre-service week, which is the week where teachers get all of their PDs, we're making sure that every PD we do on our suite of tech tools, that we are showing them how this can still work in person, and this is how it will work. And we're continuing our ongoing supports. And we're also like preaching the message of, even though you all really came through and persevered, this technology, transitioning it back into in-person, is gonna really make your life so much easier. You might have been complaining at home, but you're going to be smiling in the school building because your students are already used to logging on, you know, following along, doing asynchronous or synchronous lessons with you. So our hope is when teachers return back, they will maintain their skills, maintain the use of integrating, and we're going to be right behind them to back them. So that's our hope. I don't know, did I answer the question?
No, you did. I love that. Yeah, so when our students come back, so we've got this, you know, the technology that teachers adopted at home to really give students voice, even though they were disconnected. How do you see that transitioning back to the classroom to help with some of this unfinished learning, but also keep amplifying that student voice the way we needed to do when students were at home?
So one thing we are doing, and we are encouraging schools to do regardless of the grade levels, which will help with the integration, is small group instruction, even in high school, right? So we're encouraging small group instruction and personalized learning. And we're actually building out this summer teachers. We hire teachers every summer to look at our curriculum and see how we can integrate technology into pieces of the curriculum and name it. So if an ELA teacher was to look at a nonfiction unit, for instance, as they're going through their unit, they're going to see highlighted pieces of where it's going to be like, So if you're doing this brainstorming activity, for example, use this. This is a great tool to use. Here's the link, here's a sample lesson, et cetera, et cetera. So by calling it out specifically in the curriculum, which is important, and then encouraging schools to do that small group instruction dive, which will help more with the integration. That's how we are planning on keeping that flow going.
I love that. I love the supports just built into the planning there. So teachers don't have to necessarily pick the tool on their own. They've got that support and scaffold right in there. So you mentioned a minute ago, one of my favorite terms, which is asynchronous. I feel like we learned a lot about asynchronous learning during the pandemic. What are some of the tools and activities you are encouraging your teachers to do when it comes to asynchronous learning?
So with asynchronous and independent workstations, again, back to the small group model, independent workstations, we have our learning management system, Canvas, and then we have our beautiful Lumio. And those two tools can be used seamlessly for asynchronous, especially in independent work. So it's all about a teacher building out their lesson, sharing the link, pasting the link in our Canvas LMS for students to access. And then students can do that work in the classroom, or if they don't finish, they get to take their devices home. They can finish outside of the classroom. So that's something we're encouraging heavily, because often teachers say, I can't get through the unit. There's not enough time during the school day. Well, look, we have tools to help support you outside of the school day. So instead of, like, I don't wanna say assigning meaningless homework, because some homework is not meaningless, but instead of assigning homework that's not really tied to what students are doing, why not take a platform that begins in the classroom and can extend at home, and students can finish the work there? So
I like that. And I feel like that really helps our students by giving them the processing time that they need, the practice time they need. So they get a little bit of, you know, individuality to shine through there and to do the work in a timeframe that works with them. So one of the things we've been hearing a lot about is learning loss, and all kinds of debate around, should we even call it learning loss? What does that term mean to you? And what does that look like in DC Public?
Honestly, I feel like learning loss, it's just one of those topics. I feel like every child learns something, okay? And I think oftentimes we just rely so heavily on standardized tests to say that this student has learning loss. But I feel like if we took that term and looked at it through the lens of skills that our students need to succeed outside of school in real life, then I think we wouldn't use the term learning loss. Because I think a lot of our, I don't even want to say this out loud, but I'll say, I don't think in the education form, the term learning loss, I don't agree with it. I just don't agree with it. I think we need to look at it through a different lens of skills. A lot of our students, I feel like the majority of our students, acquired soft skills that they probably would have never acquired if the pandemic never happened, such as collaborating through different applications and software, using word processing, and you know, creating things that they probably wouldn't have had the chance to if we didn't go through a pandemic. So everybody was kind of forced to learn new skills, which I don't view as a loss. Now, if people are looking at standards and testing, I just feel like as a whole, we will always, whether we came into a pandemic or not, there's always learning loss according to standards, according to standardized tests. So I don't agree with the term that is now being thrown around during this pandemic, because I think there was a lot of gains, period. Yeah.
I hear you. And I agree with you. When we think about, you know, you mentioned the soft skills, like the things students needed to learn and to log into a computer, just that persistence, that grit, that desire to learn and having to kind of dig inside of themselves to find that connection. Like that's so powerful. And I feel like students are bringing back so many really great tools, which, you know, makes me think about some of the, like the SEL type things that we've incorporated into our teaching over the years to really amplify and build those skills for students. Do you think how you do this through technology in DC Public will be impacted by the pandemic? Are we trying to bring this soft skill development back into the face-to-face curriculum?
We're definitely trying to bring it back into the face-to-face curriculum. The larger team that I'm on in DCPS is working on something called C targets, social, emotional, academic development targets, which is like SEL, but it brings in academic and development. But like we intentionally highlight tools in the curriculum, these C targets will intentionally highlight areas for teachers to dig into the social emotional aspects of the learning, right? So for example, at the start of a unit, generally at the start of a unit, you know, a teacher would introduce the unit, might do a KWL chart or whatever, and move on. But with these SEL targets or C targets, it'll make it more intentional, like have students goal set, have them create like a tracker to see where they are progressing in the unit. So we're incorporating these tiny pieces and intentionally highlighting them into our curriculum as well, because that's the only way people are gonna do it. If they don't see it in their curriculum, and they're not gonna be out there searching for it on the internet. Or if they are searching it for it on the internet, they might find one or two things and do it one or two times and that's it. So we're trying to make things more intentional as far as SEO, as far as the SEO approach and the tech integration approach by highlighting those things within the curriculum that teachers teach.
I love that. I mean, I heard you say so many great things that you're building in with those tech tools where students are setting the goals, they're getting the feedback, they're seeing their progress. And like you've mentioned already in our conversation, really letting students kind of grow as individuals. And for me, like, I get so excited when I hear things like that. When we think about, you know, this next year, if you had, you know, kind of a, I don't know, one thing that you would say you really want to have come out of the pandemic and inspire your classrooms moving forward, is there one shift that you'd really like to see?
That's tough. You said what?
I said, that's a tough one.
But you know what? I would like to see our students are already risk takers with tech. I mean, we find all types of things as an EdTech team where students are like creating their own meetings to like come to this conference if you can do this Minecraft game, et cetera. But I want our teachers to be just as bold as our students are. I want them to be risk takers and trying new things with being innovative and being able to integrate without fearing failure. Failure is a part of growth, right? Educators are so focused on, especially not failing in front of their students or not having the technology fail in front of the students, that they don't want to try it because they're like, I don't want this to happen in the middle of my lesson and blah, blah, blah. So I want, if there's one thing that comes out of this pandemic, because our teachers experienced teams shutting down, this lesson not loading, that student can't access. So I want them to take that risk-taking characteristics that they developed during the pandemic, and I want them to bring that into the classroom. I want them to bring that mindset of, hey, I want to try this to see if it works, and if it doesn't work, it's okay. I'm going to try something else.
Yeah, I love that, Sakana, and I love that as advice for anyone, for any educator, technologist, and even the leaders out there who might have some concern and some fear around trying new things, some trepidation around failure, especially, you know, standing in front of, 35 kids in the classroom and thinking, oh, what if I fail at this? Well, you're all going to learn something together.
Yeah.
No matter what that looks like, whether it looks like quote success or quote failure, it's all important.
And what a great lesson for our students too, right? And when, you know, Sakan, you mentioned real world and just showing them that, yep, sometimes things don't work and we iterate and move forward. I love that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sakan, for being here with Chris and I today. Really appreciate the conversation and your why comes through in everything that you say and everything that you do. I do want to ask before we jump off, we're having this conversation early on in the day, but I want to ask what the best part of your day has been so far.
The best part, I love, so we're building these self-paced courses for students and teachers on our tools that we support. And the best part of my day so far is just looking at the draft of what my team has built out, all the interactions that they have there. So far, that's the best part of my day, including chatting with you ladies.
Amazing. Love it. Thank you so much, Sakan.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the EdShift podcast. If you love the show, leave us a review. If you don't love it, let us know how we can make it better for you. You can connect with us by email or on social media anytime. Remember to check the show notes for resources, links, and connections with our guests, along with bonus lesson content connected to each episode's conversation. Thanks for being here and connecting with us.